Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 422, titled True Lies, More About Conan the Republican. This is being recorded on August 25th of 2003. Recall the Spitfire website, spitfirelist.com. There are detailed annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs available at that website. It's equipped with real audio, so listeners can hear the two most recent half-hour segments for a period of a week or so. And that's linked to two websites run by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has the more recent For the Record program streaming on Real Audio. And there is a longer URL linked to both the WFMU-FM website and to the Spitfire website that has the balance of the For the Record series available for download only, also on Real Audio. As I'm speaking on 8/25/2003, the WFMU websites should be up shortly. They had some computer problems. Now, we're going to go back to the subject of Arnold Schwarzenegger, something I would really prefer not to talk about, given my druthers, simply because I'm not interested in the land of cinema, and I make a point of not watching television, and generally pop culture isn't my bag, so to speak. However, Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, is now in the political arena, and that raises some interesting questions. I want to note, for the benefit of listeners, that a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger that appeared in Sports Illustrated's issue of December 7th, 1987, on page 84, a picture of Schwarzenegger in his bodybuilding days posing against a mountain chain, very obviously giving the Hitler salute. That is now up on the Spitfire website. It is at a link to For the Record program number 421's description. I have not yet completed the description. That should be up by the end of the week. But I would note for the benefit of listeners that if they go to the description for FTR 421 or where it will be, there is a link which will show you the picture of Schwarzenegger giving the Nazis salute, basically while posing for bodybuilding purposes. That picture, by the way, is not a doctored picture. It was Xeroxed directly from Sports Illustrated. The article itself is called Pecs Sell Ticks. That's T-I-X, and it's not a reference to Lyme disease. And it is on page 84. The picture, that is on page 84. The article itself begins on page 80 of Sports Illustrated. Now, we're going to jump right in where we left off in for the Record 421. There is some very interesting circumstantial evidence suggesting the possibility that Schwarzenegger might, in fact, be the chosen son, so to speak, or chosen one of the Underground Reich. Obviously, this is indeterminate, but how many political figures running for office in the United States have you seen giving the Nazi salute? Raises some interesting questions. In For the Record 421, we've dealt with Schwarzenegger's father's Nazi past. He was in the SA, the Austrian SA, before the Anschluss, when it was illegal. He then served as a policeman in Austria when all of the police were under the nominal supervision of Heinrich Himmler's RSHA. He then joined the German army, became a military policeman in the Feldgendarmerie, and served with the 4th Panzer Corps on the Eastern Front. One of the major functions of the Feldgendarmerie was to liaise with the Einsatzgruppen and the mobile killing squads that did much of the dirty work on the Eastern Front. 4th Panzer's Einsatzgruppe did to death more than 2 million Jews alone, in addition to many communists and partisans and simply normal civilians on the Eastern Front in the first year of that campaign. We've noted in the past, specifically in For the Record 421, that among the groups selected for post-war underground work in the Underground Reich were policemen and the disabled veterans who were still able to function. Schwarzenegger's father, Gustav Schwarzenegger, was both of those. And I would also note that they selected women for post-war underground work. Schwarzenegger's soon-to-be wife, a widow, had worked for the Austrian government dispensing food stamps, and I noted that Helena von Damm, who was the protege of Otto von Bolsching, and later selected all of the personnel from which Ronald Reagan made all of his cabinet appointments, and when he became president, she selected the lists of all of the personnel from which he made all of his presidential appointments. Helena von Damm, the protege of key SS man Otto von Bolsching, about whom we've spoken many times in the past. Von Bolsching brought here by Alan Dulles. It was Alan Dulles' son-in-law who arranged for Kurt Waldheim, a Nazi war criminal, to get his position in the post-World War II Austrian government. One of the things that I want to note here is the word networking. Again, if people say conspiracy, then that's simply, oh my God, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. But the operant word here is networking, and that is precisely what we're looking at. Consider also the words hierarchy and oligarchy, because those are two of the other things we're looking at. Also bear in mind, when I speak about the Underground Reich, we're talking about a mafia-like institution, political in nature, which, in the form of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, was able to draw on the aggregate of five of the principal tides of capital flow in the 20th century. The recycling of the wealth from America's industrial boom of the 1920s and its investment in Europe and in Imperial Japan, and then the looting of all of occupied Europe, netting a sum of some $143 billion, according to British intelligence, minus what the Third Reich looted from Greece and the Soviet Union. That was in early 40s dollars and would be greater than the U.S. national debt today. The recapitalization of Germany and Europe under the Marshall Plan, and then the recirculation of the capital that had flown out to various neutral countries under the Bormann Flight Capital Program. It then flowed back in to fuel the post-war German recovery and also to fuel the post-war Underground Reich's political aspirations. Bear in mind the profound connections of the Third Reich, the residua of the Third Reich's intelligence service and the SS to the intelligence services of the United States, among other countries. Now, networking, bear that in mind. We're going to take a look briefly again at a passage that we looked at last week from The Secret War Against the Jews, co-authored by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, the hard and soft cover editions by St. Martin's Press, copyright 1994. Now, of the crusade for freedom under which not only Central and Eastern European Nazis and fascists, including SS and war criminals, at least one entire Belarusian SS unit was imported into the United States, we're going to be taking a look at some networking reviewing very briefly. By the way, bear in mind last week that Orrin Hatch, a Republican, an associate of Arnold Schwarzenegger, has now introduced a bill on the floor of Congress to make a constitutional amendment extant that would allow naturalized Americans to become president of the United States. Of course, the notion that someone associated with a Nazi diaspora could become first governor of California and then president of the United States is utterly preposterous, as we know, particularly if that person's only political credentials were that they had been a movie actor and that they had had connections with Alan Dulles, among others. That's silly, of course. The footnote from Secret War Against the Jews, of the Crusade for Freedom, we read, "As a young movie actor in the early 1950s, Ronald Reagan was employed as the public spokesperson for an OPC front named the Crusade for Freedom. Reagan may not have known it, but 99% of the Crusade's funds came from clandestine accounts, which were then laundered through the Crusade to various organizations such as Radio Liberty, which employed Dulles' fascists. Bill Casey, who later became CIA director under Ronald Reagan, also worked in Germany after World War II on Dulles' Nazi Freedom Fighters program. When he returned to New York, Casey headed up another OPC front, the International Rescue Committee, which sponsored the immigration of these fascists to the United States. Casey's committee replaced the International Red Cross as the sponsor for Dulles' recruits. Confidential interviews, former members, OPC, former members, British Foreign and Commonwealth Office. Well, bear in mind that this program, the Crusade for Freedom, was headed up by Alan Dulles, who was a close associate of the Bush family and invested Bush family money on behalf of the Third Reich. The person who oversaw that was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was very close to the Bush family as well, and the Nazi diaspora that was incorporated ultimately into the Republican Party, that diaspora that came to the United States under the Crusade for Freedom, was formally made a permanent part of the Republican Party when George Bush's father was the chairman of the Republican National Committee. And bear in mind that making all of the selections for Ronald Reagan was Helena von Damm, who married William Clark, a member of an Army intelligence unit. He came to the United States. She promptly divorced him, married Christian von Damm, who last we heard was head of the Bank of America's La Paz, Bolivia branch in 1982, with Klaus Barbie and his Coca Fascisti, including members of the P2 Lodge of Italy, and so on and so forth. Bear in mind what we read last week, that women had been selected to fulfill key roles in the post-war underground Reich. Now, key term here, networking. Bear in mind, too, a little bit of networking. Richard Nixon ran for president in 1960, was defeated by then-Senator John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who was promptly assassinated by very powerful elements, including elements of the underground Reich. Richard Nixon ran for governor of California in 1962. He was defeated, but Reagan gained that in 1966. One of the things that has been made out in the media about Arnold Schwarzenegger is that his liberalism can be attested to by the fact that he married a member of the Kennedy family. That woman, of course, is Maria Shriver, the daughter of Sergeant Shriver and Eunice Shriver. I would note that as we touched on last week, that particular branch of the Kennedy family has some very interesting connections. Sergeant Shriver, as we noted last week, is one of the key American members of Opus Dei, an ultra-reactionary Vatican order that helped to elevate a young Polish priest named Karol Wojtyla to the position of Pope. This following the very brief reign of Pope John Paul I, who died under rather ambiguous circumstances after allegedly telling colleagues that he was going to clean out members of the P2, including people associated with people who had served as advisors of the Vatican Bank. We've dealt with this at considerable length in RFA number 17. And also in RFA number 18. We're going to update the P2 Lodge. Bear in mind that one of the people who was associated with the P2 Lodge and who succeeded Michele Sindona as Vatican financial advisor was Roberto Calvi. His alleged suicide was just ruled a murder and is once again under investigation. It is the Swiss subsidiary of his Banco Ambrosiano, the Banco del Gottardo, that is part of the Altaqua milieu that we have seen. In RFA 17, we talk about the Opus Dei, and bear in mind, as one assesses the background, the networking of which Schwarzenegger is a beneficiary, that Opus Dei is the organization to which Sergeant Shriver belongs. We're going to quote from some media excerpts from a website that I will have annotated. This is about Opus Dei from an Angel Fire website. The full URL will be in the description for this show. Turning once again to the subject of the Opus Dei. The Opus Dei is the organization that is closely connected to the Shriver family. From Newsweek, September 20th of 1982, quote, John Paul's shock troops, when Rome needed a corps of spiritual soldiers to lead the Counter-Reformation, a Spanish visionary named Ignatius of Loyola put his newly formed Society of Jesus at the Pope's personal disposal. The early Jesuits were ultra-Orthodox, highly disciplined, well-educated in secular studies, and in the eyes of their enemies, experts in evasion. Today, these same traits characterize the members of Opus Dei, God's work, an international organization of Roman Catholics also founded by a Spaniard, And some church officials believe destined to replace the Jesuits as the favored shock troops of Pope John Paul II. Opus Dei encourages its unmarried members to flagellate themselves periodically with meter-long leather whips and to wear the cilicio, a chainmail band about the thigh or waist. "What I don't like is their dictatorial style and their secrecy," says one U.S. prelate. The Pope has confirmed the role of the ultra-conservative movement in the future of the Church that provides a haven for Catholics who are uncomfortable with the ambiguities of ordinary Christian life, unquote. From Rocky Mountain News, May 17th of 1992, quote, "Beatification draws crowds in controversy. Pope's decision to honor religious group founder turns into public debate." Quote, according to one critic, Father Escriva was vain, supported Spain's fascist dictator Francisco Franco, was aristocratic, autocratic, and had a terrible temper that exploded on those opposed to his movement. Another, who worked closely with Escriva before he fired her, described in her memoirs Escriva's violent temper and a vengeful threat to retaliate against her if she ever spoke against Opus Dei, unquote. Bear in mind that Karl Wojtyla himself worked at Auschwitz under very strange circumstances and has very, very strong connections to international fascism and the P2 Lodge and its residua, as we looked at in, among other programs, RFA 17, available from Spitfire. Now, again, skip the word conspiracy. It's loaded, and it has actually served to not only obscure some very important political realities, because now journalists and or academicians can simply wave their hand and say, oh, that's conspiracy theory. But another effective element of cover-up has become the conspiracists themselves. And by this, I don't mean people who do political research, but people who embrace the truly whacked-out conspiracy milieu that has grown up in the last 10 to 15 years, and it is truly insane, at least some elements of it. And it's also more than a little fascistic as well, and is now metamorphosing into sort of the Jewish banking conspiracy, space aliens are our beneficiaries, geeks and proto-fascists that have that really fit the stereotypes that have been advanced by those who would choose not to examine the parapolitics that are embracing our times. But again, networking. Now, how did Arnold Schwarzenegger get to meet the Kennedy family? New York Times, Sunday, August 17th of 2003. Schwarzenegger's next goal on dogged, ambitious path. This is by Bernard Weinraub and Charlie DeDuff at Stateline LA. And skipping ahead in the article, we read, Mr. Schwarzenegger has climbed a social as well as political ladder. He used his early fame to get acquainted with Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. When Pumping Iron was released, Mr. Schwarzenegger told the film's publicity agent, Bobby Zarum, that the one person he wanted to meet was Mrs. Onassis. Mr. Zarum spoke to a friend who worked for Mrs. Onassis. A luncheon meeting was arranged at Elaine's in New York to introduce the relatively unknown Mr. Schwarzenegger to Mrs. Onassis, Andy Warhol, and others. A photograph of Mr. Schwarzenegger talking to Mrs. Onassis was widely distributed, and his celebrity grew. Now, of course, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis was the widow of President Kennedy, who, along with his brother Robert, were men that I greatly admire. In fact, it was studying the assassination of President Kennedy that convinced me to go into political research. I would note that Jackie Onassis was a member of the Auchincloss family, and her mother was very close to George de Morenshield, the white Russian and apparent Nazi spy, who was not only one of Lee Harvey Oswald's handlers, but who also was a close friend of the elder George Bush, as we've looked at in RFA 32, among other programs. We came back to that in FTR program number 367 as well. We're going to turn briefly to an interesting bit of networking. We've gone into this in a number of past FTR programs. We've looked at this in, for the record, 378, among other shows. This, in turn, references information from an essay by the remarkable Kevin Coogan titled Report on Al-Taqwa, Islamists, and the Far Right. It's available on the web at the Oracle Syndicate website. You can simply do a Google search on Kevin Coogan's name, last name C-O-O-G-A-N. And in turn, this accesses information from, among other sources, his excellent book, Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International. And as I've stressed in the past, my use of Kevin's material here should not be misunderstood as constituting an endorsement by Kevin, either for the working hypothesis presented on Mr. Schwarzenegger or any of the other hypotheses that I've advanced on this program. What we're going to be looking at here is a bit of networking in which Hjalmar Schacht, the Nazi finance minister and a key element of the Underground Reich, used Aristotle Onassis to attempt to wean Saudi oil away from the West. Speaking of an hypothesis that perhaps the events of September 11th, among other things, and also the milieu of the Underground Reich overlapping with Islamists through the Al-Taqwa network, that it may have been intended, among other things, to switch the oil wealth of the Middle East away from the United States, if this were at all the case, it would not be a new development. The very same attempt to develop an independent Saudi-German hookup to subvert the U.S. and British domination of the Saudi oil markets was actually attempted in the mid-1950s. At that time, the Saudi royal family, using the advice of the famous German banker Hjalmar Schacht, attempted to employ Aristotle Onassis to transport Saudi oil on new tankers that would be constructed in the shipyards of Germany. This attempt to break the Western oil control over Saudi Arabia was finally blocked by the United States, a story well documented in Jim Hogan's book Spooks. By the way, one of the things we've noted in Kevin Coogan's treatment of that passage was that it was it proved very, very difficult for people who wanted to interdict the Jeddah Agreement to convince Alan Dulles' CIA that the national interest was at stake. One wonders to what extent George Bush's CIA and its residua or its successors have proved absolutely refractory to the United States. So again, skip the word conspiracy. The word is networking, oligarchy, hierarchy, and power. And note that as admirable as the Kennedy family are, there have been members of the Kennedy family who were stained with fascism. President Kennedy's father had been pro-Hitler. Perhaps that's one of the reasons why they've made a point, the Underground Reich, that is, of developing at least some apparent tangential links to the Kennedy family, perhaps to use the magic of the Kennedy name. So when you hear Maria Shriver's name kicked up as one of the reasons why Arnold Schwarzenegger is not to be viewed with suspicion, keep in mind that there is some interesting networking going through the background of Ms. Shriver's family. More about some of the networking that has led to Schwarzenegger's rise to power. Again, he says he is an everyman. He claims he's going to throw the special interests out of Sacramento, invokes very nice phrases. But in fact, the networking behind Arnold Schwarzenegger is very different from his everyman persona. Speaking of Franco Colombo, a former bodybuilder and one of Schwarzenegger's lifelong companions, in the early 1980s, Mr. Colombo, now a chiropractor, invited one of his patients, Dana Rohrabacher, a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, to have dinner with the action hero. "When I first met him, he talked about how much he loved America, how much he admired Reagan," said Mr. Rohrabacher, now a congressman from Huntington Beach. "I remember him saying, 'Dana, someday I'm going to be governor of California, and I'm going to call you.' I knew he was a guy going places," unquote. Mr. Schwarzenegger's film stardom led him to meet top Republicans like Mr. Reagan, Vice President George Bush, and Pete Wilson, then a senator from California and eventually the governor. Although he keeps a bust of Mr. Reagan in his office, Mr. Schwarzenegger grew especially close to Mr. Bush, admiring his pragmatism and worldview and regular style of speech. Mr. Schwarzenegger's campaign team for the run for governor consists of Mr. Wilson, a Republican whose support for rigid measures to combat illegal immigration contrasted with his moderate approach to abortion and other social issues, and some senior members of his old Sacramento crew, including Bob White, his longtime strategist. Mr. Schwarzenegger has drawn other powerful and well-known figures to his cause. Warren Buffett, the billionaire financier and a friend of Mr. Schwarzenegger, came aboard as a financial consultant, and George P. Shultz, Secretary of State under President Reagan and friend of Mr. Wilson from the Hoover Institute, is helping the campaign. By the way, George Shultz was also a Nixon cabinet member and a key figure in the Bechtel Corporation as well. Bechtel, by the way, linked to the Bin Laden family, among others. Skipping down further, Mr. Schwarzenegger's thin political resume includes a stint as chairman of the President's Council on Physical Fitness under the first President George Bush, and sponsor of last year's successful California ballot initiative Proposition 49, which channeled state money into after-school programs. It also introduced him into the Sacramento power clique. So again, note some of the interesting networking that is going on here. I would note that Schwarzenegger in 1990 began to cover his tracks vis-a-vis allegations of anti-Semitism. Never confirmed, but anecdotally reported, he asked the Wiesenthal Institute to investigate his father's past and has been very generous in helping to support not only the Wiesenthal Institute, but also the Museum of Tolerance. I would note in this context, as we've noted in a number of broadcasts, as you can read in the descriptions for FTR 294, or in the excerpting of Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, that is available in the description for FTR 305, the Bormann Organization and the Underground Reich has made a point of financing Israel and helping it to incorporate wealthy Jews into its structure, an excellent and very Machiavellian form of co-option. Perhaps one of the reasons why the international Jewish community has been so strikingly silent on many of the things that I speak about on this program. We're going to come back to some of the interesting networking going on here later on in the broadcast. By the way, bear in mind the book Serpent's Walk, and what is it that ultimately is going to be projecting, according to this Nazi tract, the Underground Reich into overground status, in addition to cataclysm infiltration of the United States Army and devastating bioterrorism against the United States. It is the use of the opinion-forming mass media and the buying into that mass media. An interesting, perhaps tangential, perhaps relevant, perhaps irrelevant item as we bridge to the next side of the broadcast. Noting John Milius, who was Arnold Schwarzenegger's first director on Conan the Barbarian, turning to Arnold, the unauthorized biography by Wendy Lee, published by Congdon and Weed in 1990. Calling himself a Zen fascist, Milius claims, quote, "My politics are strange. I'm so far to the right, I'm probably an anarchist," unquote. Milius also had his own motorcycle gang of friends, aptly named Mobile Strike Force Paranoia. And according to one source on set, quote, "Aides come and go with clicking heels and mock Nazi salutes," unquote. Working on a Milius film was a unique experience. Said Arnold, "He runs a set like an army. So that's the feeling everyone had, that this wasn't a movie, it was a battle. I felt like I was once again an army tank driver back home in Austria. It was a high-spirited set, and Milius took it all very well, the Nazi salutes and drills. General Milius written on the back of his director chair," unquote. An interesting choice of director for Arnold's mainstream film debut, Milius soon became a firm friend of Arnold's. So, any significance to that? It's an odd term, a Zen fascist. Anyway, we're going to take a look at Ronald Reagan's character and some more of his networking in the second side of the broadcast. Bear in mind Spitfire, spitfirelist.com, WFMU.org, and a linked website for download only. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 422, True Lies. More about Conan the Republican, being recorded on August 25th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.